everyone. My name is Jonathan Hickman, and I am in a group with both Jessica Neef and Jessica Pope. We decided to put our presentation into a website via a Prezi. Now, to get started, all you have to do is press the play button on the Prezi, and we can get started. So if you'll go ahead and do that for me. All right. Now, throughout this presentation, you are going to hear a cue. This cue sounds like this. Alright, that cue is actually going to be what tells you to press the next button on the Prezi. So, let's get started with our first cue. This is our title page for the presentation that we have called The Mohawks, People of the Flint. Now, I'm sure all of you are very interested in why they were called the Mohawks. Well, it's actually an interesting story. The Mohawk name was actually given to them by other Algonquian-speaking tribes and means man-eater or flesh-eater in the Algonquian tongue. Of course, the Mohawks didn't call themselves the Mohawks. They referred to themselves as Kanye Kahaka, which means people of the Flint. This name referred to their location in New York, where flint, a stone used for arrowheads and spearheads, was an abundant commodity. Of course, being the Mohawk group, we have a certain responsibility to answer the question, did they actually have Mohawks? Well, I pity the fool that doesn't believe it. Of course they did. That's where we got the name for the popular alternative hairstyle. Now also, I'm sure all of you are dying to know where the Mohawks lived. Well, the Mohawks lived along the Mohawk River in what we call New York State. They were the keepers of the Eastern Gate to the Iroquois Confederacy and were responsible for keeping out invaders that came from the East. After the American Revolution, most of the Mohawks ended up moving to Canada for reasons that you will find out later in this presentation. Can you stand the suspense? I'll try to keep it entertaining until then. Well, now I suppose it's time to move on to what the Mohawks actually lived in. Well, the Mohawks, as did the rest of the Iroquois, lived in longhouses. Longhouses were built out of wooden poles covered with dirt and elm bark, and they could accommodate up to 60 people. An entire clan could live in one longhouse, which could be up to 100 feet long. Of course, today longhouses are only used for ceremonial purposes. Believe it or not, the Mohawks actually live in normal houses nowadays. Don't you just love that drum beat? Now it's time for a summary of the longhouse interiors. Shelves were built inside for food, utensils, and tools. Bins inside the longhouse were used for dried food and cured meats. And at the end of the longhouses, wood is stored for heating and cooking uses. If you look to the bottom right-hand corner, you'll see a little picture of what the inside of a Mohawk longhouse may look like. Now, let's move on to Mohawk clothing. The Mohawk people made most of their clothing from deerskin. Men wore a breechcloth in the summer months, and in the colder months they wore deerskin leggings and a full-piece deerskin skirt and coat. Women tended to go topless with a deerskin shirt in the summer months. In the winter months, they would wear full deerskin dress. Now, continuing on our subject of Mohawk clothing, Mohawk people wore moccasins in the winter when most of the men would be out hunting on long hunting expeditions. In the summer, they wore slippers made of corn husk. Both men and women wore necklaces and earrings made of shells. If you look at the bottom, we have examples of what you might see in a Mohawk tribe. The shell necklace on the left, and the moccasins on the right. Here, we talk about the roles and traditions of the Mohawk people. All members of the Mohawk tribe, including men, women, and children, had equal shares of the workload. Mohawk men, for example, were in charge of hunting for food. Since we've touched on the subject of hunting and the traditions of the men, we're now going to talk about the hunting traditions of the Mohawk men. Traditionally, bows and arrows, knives, axes, or tomahawks were the weapons of the Mohawk, though later they did acquire rifles from the Dutch. Mohawk men hunted for deer, beaver, elk, moose, wild turkey, and partridge. Fish are also caught within the lakes and rivers of their area. In the Mohawk tribe, there were many instances where the Mohawks used what they called a V-hunt. This is where they form a V and use rattles and make other loud noises to scare animals to lead them into the point of the V. Here the animals could be easily killed. In the winter months, the men go on long hunting ventures. Sometimes they can last until spring. I don't know about you guys, but about 5 minutes into a hunt in the winter, I'm bored and cold and want to go home. I guess my people would starve. Continuing on our quest to explain the roles and traditions of the Mohawk men wore their hair in a Mohawk style, as I said earlier in this presentation, with three feathers for battle. This hairstyle made them look fierce to the enemy. Mohawk women often wore their hair down or in a single braid, rubbed with bear grease. Yeah, I said bear grease. Now let's go ahead and move on to the Mohawk women. Guess what? They were the farmers. Women planted corn, beans, and squash. They also gathered sap, berries, nuts, and wild sweet potatoes. Of course, that's not all they were good for. There were also a select few women within each clan that were known as the clan mothers, and they helped make decisions for the tribe in the Iroquois Confederacy. We'll talk more about that later. By this point, we've talked about the Mohawk women and the Mohawk men. Now it's time to talk about their children. The Mohawk children played with other children, of course, but also did plenty of chores. Many of them were also schooled with the white children of the day. Girls tended to play with corn husk dolls, as shown on the right, and boys played a game similar to lacrosse, if not actually lacrosse, today. Now let's talk about the lives of the Mohawks and how they're organized in a yearly cycle. The cycle of activities in the Mohawk tribe was based on the phases of the moon. Some examples are, the first economic activity would actually take place 2 moons after midwinter. At this time, women would go into the woods to gather sap from the maple trees. Next, the men would go out and hunt for birds that have arrived in the early spring, such as partridges. They also catch fish at this time. This is followed by the women starting their farming in the fields. These tasks fill the summer and fall months and end with the fall harvest. In the fall, the men leave for their long hunting expeditions that I was talking about earlier. They won't return until the winter solstice. Now seems like a good time to get into some of the ceremonies of the Mohawk Indians. In the later slides, we're going to talk about some of the ceremonies that they actually celebrate. However, right now, we'll just outline how most of them go. All ceremonies started and ended the same way. There was always a Thanksgiving speech given at the beginning and end of each ceremony, though it was not always the same speech at every ceremony. let's talk about what happened at these ceremonies. Singing, dancing, and eating were a very large part of every ceremony that's performed. Burning tobacco is another tradition that is performed at most ceremonies. When we say the burning of tobacco, we don't mean that they're smoking it, though they probably were. The actual burning of tobacco in a sort of bonfire is done so that the other tribes that live in the distance can see the smoke from the burn. Also, important artifacts were usually present at these ceremonies. The Mohawks engaged in what they called a thunder ceremony. The thunder ceremony is done when the first set of storms roll through for the year. They're done to give thanks to the rain, which helps the crops grow. Tobacco is thrown in a fire, sending smoke up to the clouds. Now let's move onward to the strawberry ceremony. Those of you from Troy will know what this is. The strawberry ceremony occurred during the month of June, when the strawberries were coming on the plants. Tobacco is left completely out of this ceremony, and it's meant to renew the spirits within the tribes. The third and last ceremony that we will be covering is called the Little Water Ceremony. This ceremony was for medicine. Two snakes are stuck in a bucket with strawberries and left overnight. This ceremony must actually be performed in the dark. There is to be no smoking, drinking, or menstruating at this ceremony. I'm not 100% sure how the menstruating works. I just read the facts. In conclusion to our chapter on ceremonies of this presentation, ceremonies were used to celebrate, praise, and give thanks for things that have been given to them throughout the year. Ceremonies have a particular structure to them that must be followed at each and every one. Ceremonies are a part of every season and every month on the calendar. Now seems like a good time to talk about the Mohawk involvement in the Iroquois Confederation. But first, we have to outline exactly what the Iroquois Confederation is. The Iroquois Confederation consists of the Cayuga, the Oneida, the Seneca, the Onondaga, and the Mohawk tribes. Later, the Tuscarora tribe would be admitted to the group. This confederation was originally created in order to prevent war between the major tribes. A constitution called the Great Law of Peace was instituted by a man named Dagon Wida of the Huron tribe. This peace was an effort to keep the tribes at bay and at peace for many years to come. The role of the Mohawk tribe in the Iroquois Confederation was actually a very important one. This is because one of the main founders of the Confederacy was, in fact, a Mohawk himself named Hiawatha. The idea of an alliance between the nations was conjured by the Huron prophet Dagon Wida and his spokesman, which was Hiawatha. Hiawatha negotiated with the Iroquois chiefs presenting Dagon Wida's ideas because, for some reason, Dagon Wida had trouble speaking in front of crowds. Hiawatha was the first Native American to accept Dagon Wida's ideas, and it was Dagon Wida's ideas that brought the Constitution of the Great Law of Peace into action. Even further into the realm of the Iroquois Confederacy, the Mohawk tribe alone had 9 representatives from the tribe who were basically spokesmen in the council at the Confederation. There were 9 because they needed 3 representatives for each of their clans, which included the Turtle, Wolf, and Bear. Each of these tribal leaders had a say in the major decision-making. Also, tribal leaders had a local council called the Clan Mothers, which were all female, from their clan that guided decisions and how they would be represented to the Iroquois Confederation. The Mohawk tribe took a lot of part in many wars. The most notable four were the Beaver Wars, the Dutch Indian Wars, the French Indian Wars, and the Revolutionary War. Now we'll talk about some of those. Now we're going to do an overview of the Dutch Indian War. To start it all off, they lost a battle to the Dutch and rival tribes, the Huron and the Algonquian. The Algonquian and Hurons were actually accompanied by Samuel de Champlain, and they were carrying firearms. Therefore, the Mohawks lost. Then the Mohawks swore revenge, defeated Henry Hudson and the Mohicans, maintained a monopoly of trade with the Dutch, which gave them firearms. Then they gained revenge on the Huron and Algonquin with the Dutch firearms. The firearms led to the Beaver Wars. We will get to the Beaver Wars here in just a second. The Mohawks' trade and goods with the Europeans are for now. The Europeans were landing in the harbors and bringing goods to the Mohawks that they needed in boats. The Mohawks were willing to trade beaver felts for the products that they wanted, such as the firearms. The Europeans wanted the pelts for the people in England, where they were in high demand. The Beaver Wars were basically a war over the beaver population, which was depleting because of the Mohawks' use of the firearms. But it wasn't just the Mohawks, it was other tribes as well that had the firearms that the Dutch had traded to them. These wars were basically fought between the Iroquois Confederacy tribes. Now on to the French Indian War. In the French Indian War, the Mohawk people were divided into the Praying Indians of Quebec and the traditional Mohawks of New York. The Praying Indians of Quebec were originally traditional Mohawks, but they had become converted to Catholicism and moved north to Canada. It was in Canada that they met up with the French and ended up actually going against the rest of the Iroquois nation by siding with the French. Perhaps it was the Revolutionary War that marked the Mohawks' most noted warfare experience. It was during the Revolutionary War that the Mohawks were led by their war chief Théan de Nagia, also known as Joseph Brant. He said, "If we do nothing for the British, there will be no peace for us. We should go and join the Father. This is the only way for us." He said this in order to get the Mohawks and the other Iroquois to the British side. After the Americans won the Revolutionary War, the Mohawks were forced to follow Joseph Brant out of the United States to Ontario, Canada. The Mohawks of today mostly still live in Canada, since they moved there after the Revolutionary War, though some still live in New York State. However, only 5,000 are left today. Mr. T says, "The end. I pity the fool that doesn't vote Mohawk." Thanks for making it through to the end, guys. Thanks for putting up with all of the drum beats that I put you through. And thank you, Mr. T, for your guest appearance.